Again.
You've really had an amazing career, from the early comedy club circuit to Saturday Night Live, movies, television, and now 2 years into a killer syndicated radio show. You really seem to have found a groove. Are you digging the show?
Yeah. You know, I didn't know what to make of it at first, Carl, because, well, you do radio. I did not know that till recently, but you can see that it's a little intimidating at first. But I find the extrapolative nature of it liberating, whereas at first I thought I wouldn't have any idea how to fill 3 hours. I can find it triggers some sort of mixture of limbic fear and free associative powers that it makes it fun. Yeah, I dig it a lot.
It seems like the perfect medium for you. I mean, I do an hour a week for like a year and a half, and it's, my prep like wears me out, so I can't imagine doing 3 hours a day. I mean, I feel
like... Well, here's my key to that. Don't prep.
Yeah, I think it's almost better that way. As I get a little more comfortable with it, I just came in, jumped, pulled the chute, and then hoped for the best, you know?
Well, that's what I'm into. I find out if I'm backed in a corner, the Joycean rant comes out a little easier. If I have anything premeditated, more than often I step in it.
Yeah, that's what happens, I think. I wanted to talk to you briefly, too, about stand-up comedy. You are, honestly, without question, my top comedy mentor.
Carl. That's sweet of you.
Well, it's really true. In fact, I first saw you in the late 70s at this same comedy club in Amherst, New Hampshire, where I've been performing recently. It's still orchestrated by Bill Downs of Boston
God,
Comedy.
I remember that gig.
Isn't that incredible?
The windiest night of my life, I think. It's in prop plane. It was crazy. I felt like La Bamba coming in there. Glad to know the gig went okay.
It's probably exactly right. You probably landed on a grass strip that night and you didn't even know it.
I felt like I was picking up James Mason and Marty Landau in North by Northwest.
The thing I love about stand-up comedy, I've been doing it on and off for like 15 years, and it's funny, the first time I did it was not in a happy period of my life, but in the most dark period. I remember my wife telling me, I said, I think I'm going to go down to Grill 93 in Andover and do some open mic. I've always wanted to do it. She said, make sure you take the gun out of your mouth before you go on stage. So, it's interesting.
No, that's a great joke.
Well, it's still, you just don't know what compels you to do it. But the thing I love about it is technology can't change it. At the end of the day, it's always going to be a stool, a microphone, and a comic. I mean, do you still love doing it?
Sure. It's like oracular samurai or something. The world could move on to intercontinental ballistic missiles, but you still, as a comedic samurai, draw the sword and practice the ancient arts. You're right. They can change it all they want with big screens and that. They can turn it into a Dane Cook gladiatorial theater and around, but at some point you have to have stuff fly out of your pie hole that piques the interest of strangers, and that's what I dig about it.
Well, and as the other end of the spectrum, I think you mentioned a week or so ago when I called that you used to formulate a set for your shrink, so
there is
that part you don't know when
to
stop.
I so wanted to please everybody, and I couldn't get on Letterman at that point, so I pretended my shrink was Morty, and then I practiced my sets on him.
All right. I began listening to talk radio, Dennis, like after 9/11. I think I started listening to I stopped listening to music, started listening to the news, and then I went to talk radio.
Yeah, me too, to some degree.
Yeah, and I really became intrigued with the medium. It's like your show, there's this cast of characters from around the country, even the world, regular folks chatting it up. It's like a big pool party, and the callers are the folks going off the diving board, doing their best show. And it's a strange relationship, but it seems like it's cathartic for both host and listener. Is there an element of that in it for you?
Yeah, I do find it cathartic. I'm a little, I have to remember sometimes, I don't have complete rhino skin. I don't want to paint myself as some Ayn Randian animatron, but I'm pretty bulletproof, so I have to remind myself periodically that I'm more bulletproof than some of the callers, because it seems to me if I... merely question any aspect of it, or the emailers, not even scathing or scolding, just I don't quite get that. I hurt feelings, so I have to remember that part of it, that people are not as not as impervious to ridicule as I am.
I think it depends on who you are, too. In fact, I remember one of my early calls to your show. I think I got a little castigated one day, and I was curled up in the fetal position for like 2.5 days, and then I dusted myself off and came back.
Yeah, well, I've been slapped around, too, by people I respect, but at the end of the day, I felt like it improved my game.
Absolutely. That's exactly how I feel about it. We're talking to Dennis Miller, host of The Dennis Miller Show, which just celebrated its second anniversary and airs on over 220 stations, I think, over that nationwide. You can learn more at www.dennismillerradio.com, and you can even join the DMZ, the Dennis Miller Zone, for special perks, which include, I think, a monthly back rub from Dennis. Are you still doing the back rub raffle?
Yeah. I can only do. I ask them to pick a shoulder blade because, quite frankly, it's like it's. I'm like Richard Kimball now. I'm looking for one armed men because I don't have time to back massage the whole DMZ.
Sure.
But I will come out and do one blade.
Excellent. You can't ask for more than that. I have to ask you about your Miller Time gig with Bill O'Reilly. About 4 years ago, my wife and I led a citizens campaign up here to bring Jessica's Law to New Hampshire because New Hampshire
that's
had
nothing. You know Bill then.
Exactly. That's where I was going. And somehow I ended up being interviewed a couple of times by Bill O'Reilly. And I remember waiting on the phone. I was like Ray Liotta in the helicopter scene of Goodfellas, stirring the sauce and waiting. But then, chatting with Bill off the air, and a lot of people don't know, he really is a great guy. He's a gentleman, and he's done so much good for the country. And you seem like you've really settled into a good stride with him. Do you get nervous doing it?
No.
No?
Bill, listen, I did everything with Bill, but I get most of it. And as far as his work with children, it's stellar. And yeah, off the air, he was raised well. He's got manners. And occasionally blows up on somebody. But guess what? It's kind of a bull world now. Doesn't everybody blow up on everybody once in a while?
Yeah.
I don't know. If you don't, guess what? When you do blow up, you blow up on your whole town. So, I don't know. Periodically, he lights up some weak cheese, and that's all right.
Well, I like that, and I think that's one of the things you and I mutually liked about Senator McCain. I like the guy. I heard you and Sal kind of going around this morning, got the week off to a rough start, but... And I'm going to get into that anyways in one of my questions here, the apology tour. But, I don't trust somebody who's so Gandhi-like that, they never snap. That concerns me.
Yeah, but Don does it in a weird way. He gets back to center point with some... He also misses the point, I think. He'll say things off the cuff. And then when something... It shouldn't be the center point of the campaign, but if a man sits in a church for 20 years and hears that sort of bow and says he never heard it, he's full of it. So for John to pick that area to take a stand seems obstinate in its own way. It seems precious and a bit narcissistic in its own way. You're going to run for president, and another guy goes to a church where the preacher yaks about hating America for 20 years. Fine, maybe you don't have to think the guy believes that too, but when he says, I never heard that, somebody's got to call bullshit.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you completely. I also wanted to mention that you've just released a DVD set of all 7, I believe, of your HBO specials.
Yeah, I was a little surprised when I went back and found out I had 7, but I think Carlin's got the most, then maybe Klein, then I think I'm tucked in there in third. And all I can tell you is those things are beasts, man. I remember when Hogan brought down the U.S. Open course one year, and he said, I've tackled this beast. That's what it feels like when you're done an HBO special. It's not like you walk away unscarred, but at least you tackled the beast.
Yeah, no, I agree. I appreciate that. I've been a regular caller to your show for about, about a year and a half now.
Yeah, one of our funniest callers.
Well, I appreciate it, man. It's a thrill for me. I called the first day I found out about your show, and I think on a recent call you compared it to the rodeo, and when I call in, you should just yell pull. And it's true, because you call in and it's challenging. You try to stay on, have a good ride, and not break any ribs. But it's been interesting because the radio show really allows people to get to know you on some level. Like I know that you.
No, that's me. I can tell you, man. There's nothing hidden. I mean, really.
That's why people love you, Dennis.
It doesn't vary much.
Yeah, you put on no airs. And I found out that you and I share a birthday of November 3rd, and I only mention that to keep the creepy meter redlined here. I have to say too that
I love vernacular. I love jargon jokes. That's funny.
I've kind of mirrored your your political metamorphosis over the years. You know, I was a young kid.
Yeah, we're pragmatists, Carl.
That's exactly where I was going, man. And I was just going to say.
I just don't trust bad guys anymore. I think we have to croak them before they croak us. Everybody acts like I'm some Trotsky or some Curtis LeMay type off the grid. I don't care about most things. I'm sort of nonplussed about most things in human interaction, except radical Islam or psychos, and we best look for places to kill them whenever we can.
Yeah, it's amazing to me, and that's exactly what I said. Is I see you, I don't see you as a hardline political guy, and neither am I. I'm a pragmatist, man, and I haven't forgotten about 9/11 and what happened on that day. I guess the rest of the country about 6 months.
Yeah, you get sucker punched periodically. You know, you can tell a bully what he's doing is wrong, and then I guess at some point if you get your butt kicked, you might as well kick back.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Finally, a couple last things here. You and I have talked about this on your show. You know, I never understood this unbridled vitriol for President Bush. He was dealt the crappy hand on 9/11. I'm not sure anyone could have done a better job in the decade following.
No, they couldn't have, because all you can predicate it on is the days without an attack. And, you know, I mean, really, I mean, everything else is subjective. I don't even tell people not to hate them if they want to hate them. That's a subjective thing, though. The only empirical judgment you can make is that he, after 9/11, got out of office without it happening again on American soil. Mazel tov. I hope Barack Obama does the same.
Absolutely. And my point in getting to this was I really appreciate your attitude of the new guy, and I feel the same way. Look, I didn't vote for him, but I'm going to give the guy a chance. He's my president. I want the best for him. And I've really, I mean, other than the excessive lending, which everyone's kind of up in arms about, I could live with. But this apology tour through America is when I first started getting a little creeped out by the guy, you know?
Yeah, through Europe. It wouldn't even be as bad if it was through America. It's on foreign soil. As far as acquitting our affairs in a foreign sense, as far as defense of the country, I like it so far. The apology stuff is crap to me, and it angers me about him. But the socialism stuff, I don't think it'll really happen. I'm not paranoid about it. I don't care about the fairness doctrine. If somebody ever comes to me and says, you have to talk to Randy Rhodes, I quit. And as far as the economy goes, I think if it gets to, there'll be some sort of insurrection halfway through. I really do. I think there'll be a tax insurrection if it gets too crazy. And they can start gunning people down in the street over taxes and then claim humanism, but that's not going to happen. You know that.
Yeah,
but
know.
I'm telling you, somewhere along the line, somebody's going to say, if the taxes get too crazy, we're gone. I'm not paying it.
Yeah, you're seeing.
So I think that'll stop that. But so far, I'd have to say, I give him a C, you know. I mean, a C-plus even, because I didn't think he'd be this strong overseas. I like him croaking the pirates. I like him reinvigorating Afghanistan. And I like the fact that it looks like Odierno's dictating our exit date in Iraq. That's all I ask. To me, the economy, domestic issues are far, far superseded by defending the homeland.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Once again, we're speaking with Dennis Miller. Very kind of him to come on Crosswinds with us here. Please check him out at DennisMillerRadio.com.
Crosswinds? What is with
well, you know what it is. You know what it is, Dennis? I'm a pilot, and we've got some other pilots here. And when I was first offered the job here, the general manager said, what do you think about this as a name for the show? And when the general manager says, you know, how do you like this as a name for your show? You go, I love it.
All right. I didn't know the piloting thing works. It makes more sense to me because I thought it was one of these John Malkovich, Will Ferrell sketches where he was coming out and polishing driftwood.
Oh, no. I was afraid you were equating it to some kind of intestinal problem, and I really got concerned for a minute there.
I got to roll, Carl. You okay? We got one more question. I got to go eat. I'm famished. I did Pilates right after the show. You know when the show ends, and I'm woozy. So
okay, here we
chicken.
Are. We'll wrap it up. Finally, Dennis, thank you very much. I can't think of another show on radio or television that is able to present the variety of guests that you come up with, man. Dana Carvey, Martin Short, Ernie Borgnine, Powers Booth, Brian Regan. It's unbelievable. How could it be more entertaining?
Like, it's an eclectic salon. I feel like Gertrude Stein and that we both dig women.
And just quickly, I promised my family that I would do a personal shout-out to you. They're more excited than I am about today. So from my sons, Brad, Adam, Dominic, Mitchell, my beautiful daughter, Marlena, my wife, Diane, Dennis, thanks so much for doing this, man. And
thanks for having me, Carl. You're a good man. Yeah. I hope we stay friends for a long time.
Right back at you. You can count on it. Yeah, sure. I'll stay friends with him for as long as you want. Dennis Miller, ladies and gentlemen, right here on Crosswinds. That was really nice of him to do that, and it was a nice chat. He's made it very comfortable to do. And interesting guy. Check him out at DennisMillerRadio.com. Right after the break, we'll get back. We got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about here, and some of it's pretty funny. It's Crosswinds with Carl Zahn, 1590 WSMN.
As a single mom, I'm happy most months just to have enough left.